Hi, Peter Boyles, of course, the morning show at KNUS and 1460 The Answer in Colorado Springs. And this is the first Boyles Over. This was an idea that came from the top at Salem Broadcasting. We've had enormous success with all of our internet, all of the internet feeds, and actually you can't see him. He's sitting off screen here. We're in, remember the old Ed Sullivan Theater? We're in the Mark Crowley Theater here in the mighty Salem Mediaplex. But they said to us, and I said, why don't you guys give this a try? So it is 9:30 on Tuesday morning. We just finished up on the morning show. And for the first time bringing this out of the box, I thought to myself, who would be better than this guy? We have been man and boy together. And I invited him, and it's snowing in Denver. And if you're watching this across the country, understand there's about a foot and a half of snow out there. And
I came on my bike.
You did. And I tell you what.
Really?
He is the most reliable man that I know. And his Tom Tancredo, as everybody knows, Tommy T, who was congressman and has been a political activist, and he's been a guy that he has lost more than he's won. But the part of that that I really love about Tom is he has that me part of him that get up off the canvas, hey, wipe your gloves off, get your hands back up, and get back into it. So without further ado, if I have a dear friend in this world and I can count on all the time, it's this guy.
Well, and here you are, tempting fate again, by asking me to come on the show, your inaugural show.
I know, first time out. And by the way, a close personal friend of yours will do the next show on Thursday, the mayor of Glendale.
Oh, good, Mike Donovan, good.
I know you've kind of locked horns with me.
Once in a while. But
I love Mike and I
do
you,
too.
So
I do too.
All's well in the world. When I was driving in this morning in the snow, and I knew we were going to do this, and I changed clothes. This is not what I wear normally. I put on a sweater. You came in. You look pretty good, but you brought that duck hunting hat with you.
This is my favorite hat because it was given to me by my buddy Steve King. Yeah. And I was out in Iowa hunting with him and Ted Cruz.
There you go.
Yeah.
What's Cruz like?
Nice guy. Very smartest guy you ever want to meet or talk to. And far more affable in that kind of a setting where we were you know, a bunch of guys
hunting. Field,
and also that night, every time Steve does this, which is every year, we have this big hunt in Iowa and shoot a lot of pheasants. And then you have a dinner, and all the politicians in the room have to do their little five-minute thing, right? And so, but when it's a presidential election year, he gets a lot of much more high-profile people than just me there. And so Cruz was there and spoke. And in that environment, he's just so much more affable and so much more, I don't know, you know, he comes off too stilted, I think, on TV.
I find that to be true. I mean, we talked about it. I had a great experience with John McCain, a couple experience with John McCain.
Oh, yeah, me
and
too.
Once again.
Holy mackerel.
I know, yours was tough. Mine was good. And then when he started campaign, I thought, that's not the guy that I hung out with. And the same thing with Bob Dole. After it was over, I met Bob Dole. Bob Dole was funny, hilarious, deprecating, made fun of himself. I thought, where's this guy?
Yeah. Well, and Ted is that way. And I know he's trying hard to sort of overcome, because everybody tells him that, you know, too stiff, you don't come off well. So I think he's trying to be more. But it's all, you can see that, too, in a way.
Yeah.
You can see him sort of forcing it, you know?
Yeah.
And I love the guy. Believe me, I think he's great. I supported him 100%. And, well, oh, gosh. So we're there at this hunt, he says to me. And I had just written, I write a column for Breitbart every week. And I just wrote the column that week that I had left the Republican Party, but that I was going to start a Colorado Independence for Cruz thing. And somebody had sent it to him. And so anyway, we're in Iowa and about to go down to this dinner thing. And he says to me, hey, I saw that article. I really appreciate it. Boy, we're going to get back. I told my people, you know, follow up on that. Never did.
Sure.
But he says, you probably don't remember this. And he said, which I'm glad when people say that, because I probably don't.
It gives you an out card.
That's exactly right. But he says, you know, in 1998, he said, you were running for Congress. He said, I was in Denver for some event. And he said, I went ahead and you came in to speak to whatever this group was. And you were running for. And he said, I wrote you a check for $100.
All right.
And I said, you're right. I don't remember. Well, I mean, I didn't know who Ted Cruz was, 1998. Who did? You're right. And so, but what was really embarrassing, I'd not given him a penny.
Well, that's,
you know, yeah. But that's one way to get you to give money to a candidate. I've thought of that. You know, I can always say, hey, you know, I gave you a check 10 years ago. About time.
You always said when you were in Congress, you always said the hardest part, as soon as you got elected, you had to start to raise money to get
money. Oh, dear. I absolutely hated it. It was the worst thing. And some of my colleagues are just, they love it. And, mm-hmm.
How do you ask? How do you ask somebody for money?
Well, you start out with, how have you been?
Yeah.
Did I give you money when you ran?
Yeah.
No, you just still think about, I'm doing what everybody's doing at this time. I'm calling because you've been kind enough in the past, because almost always calling people
sure.
who have given at least to the party, mm-hmm. maybe, so that you can start by saying, well, you are a supporter. We know that you support the party or me or mm-hmm. something because you've given money and now you're on that sucker list. I mean, you're on our list. And so you need to give us more.
Yeah. And?
Well, you know, they usually, it's amazing how many people will respond when you're actually talking to them on the phone or face-to-face, mm-hmm. as opposed to the email or snail mail, that kind of thing, naturally, because you got them there. They're going to have to say yay or nay, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes it's I'll think about it. Well, count that one out. Forget about it. You're never going to get money from them. But the ones that tell, I like the ones that tell you yes or no, one way or the other, you know where you're going with that.
If they say no, do you ask them why they say no?
No, I don't want to know. Yeah. They'll tell you. Yeah. I don't want to know why they don't want to give me money. but Peter, you have to understand, I never raised a lot of money from big donors. Because
I remember that. When you broke and we met in that restaurant and you said, I'm going to go rogue on the Republican Party and go for governor. That's when they had Dan Mays. And I think the biggest contribution you might have got was $80.
Yeah. We had the distinct honor of having the highest number of low donors of any campaign.
Yeah.
And I loved it because we had thousands and thousands. I had more donors in the last gubernatorial election that I was in, not the one I didn't make into the primary, but we had more than all of the Senate and than both of the Senate candidates combined. Mm-hmm. But they were all no more than like, you know, $35, $40
sure.
bucks. But
I
love them all.
Those. Yeah, I remember those. And that was the great Dan Mays fight.
Yeah.
And the Republican Party hung on to Dan Mays until the very... Even in the end, they were trying to
scrape him off, but they couldn't because at that time it's up to him. And remember, he was looking for a job, so his job was running,
remember,
taking money from his campaign.
He wrote that book, and he said that the reason that you and I didn't like him because he was Hispanic.
Right.
I met this guy. This guy's got like, I don't know. Well, that was a good time.
That was a good time.
We've always had a good time.
We have. Even when I come on your show and next thing I know, you get the axe. You know, it was still a great time. I had a great time.
Yeah, and that was, when I got fired at KHOW Radio, we're on this internet show, Tommy called me up. And said, you know, I'm going to make an announcement.
Now, see, I don't remember it that way. I remember he called me and said, please come on and announce on my show. That's the way I recall it.
Either way. So I billboarded on the air. And we get a call from Chanel number 9. And they said, can we come over and see Tom do this? And I said, well, of course. So Channel 9, and I think, I don't know, somebody else was there. Doesn't matter. And I look through the glass, and there's nobody through the glass that's good to go. And Tom's there, and Nine's there, and so one thing led to another.
I'm facing Peter, and the glass is behind me. I do not know what is happening. Well, didn't see anything. I saw nothing. I know nothing.
Anyhow, it led to me doing a snatch and grab on a guy, and
workplace violence.
He ran to the boss, and I got suspended, and I got fired, and so. It was Tom.
And we go. I go downstairs after this thing is done. I go downstairs and there are three more cameras set up outside.
Yeah.
And I do these little interviews. And all of a sudden, I see Channel 9 coming back.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, I was
Who's
so
the
good.
Man,
man they're coming back to get some more on me, you know.
Bad for me.
Yeah, yeah. And the gal goes, did you see what happened upstairs? And I said, no. Did you? Well, you were there, too. What do you mean? She says, I don't know. Something happened with Peter. And I said, no, I didn't see it. And I really didn't. I had no idea.
Well, long story short, I got fired. And so I thought it was only appropriate. Our first internet streaming television gig, I could only come back with the only guy I know is Tom Tancredo. But, you know, it's interesting. My grandmother would say, you know, the Lord works in mysterious ways.
Yes.
Because now that place is what that place is. And
yeah,
this place is doing tremendously well. But really, it was you were there. And actually, next Thursday when we do this again, it'll be Mike Dunifin sitting here. And I was scheduled to have lunch. You were having lunch.
I went in. You were running around in the parking lot talking on the phone. I went in.
Calling me. Right. What was going to happen.
And I said to Mike, what's going on out there? And he's the one that told me about it.
Yeah, we were supposed to have lunch because Dunifin was thinking about a gubernatorial run.
Right.
And I was, so then the phone just kept going off and I'd been suspended and they waited until my contract ran out and they fired me.
This guy will do to steal a little thunder from me. I mean, I'm trying to announce that I'm running for governor. All the only news then from that point on is Peter Boyles, who today was fired by KOA because he workplace. And, you know, Tom Tancredo, no, I don't know where he was at the time. Never heard of him.
In your career, and I think back on, you know, on getting fired from KHOW. And it was hardly the worst day of
KHOW, right.
of my life, let alone, you know, the worst day of even radio life. It, you know, it sunk in. But the cool part is that, you know, within 48 hours, I was in negotiations with these guys. And, you know, it's, I don't know.
That has certainly worked for the best, man.
Yeah, it has. But let me ask you this. In political life, worst day.
Worst day in political life.
Political life.
You know, truly, there wasn't a day, but there was a time period that was perhaps half a year. That was the worst time of my political life, was the last half year I spent in Congress.
Wow.
Because I you know, Tom DeLay would call me in periodically to chastise me and for attacking the president, for not voting with the leadership, for going into legislative congressional districts and speaking on immigration, but not but telling the truth about the incumbent Republican, saying, hey, this guy's lousy, you know, and you go back and you get called into the woodshed by the speaker or, in this case, the whip. And one day he says to me, you keep this up, he says, and he's got his finger like this in my nose. You keep this up, he said, you're going to ruin your career in this place.
Ooh.
And that tells you so much about Congress. It tells you so much about the problem in Congress, because that is the worst thing he could think of. Mm-hmm. And for most of my colleagues, believe me, that was the worst thing. And I said, Tom, that's it? I said, that's it. I said, I don't know how to explain. I don't know how to break this to you. He says, but you know what? I said, I don't want a career in this place. I don't even like this place. And that last 6 months, every Monday morning, going back to the airport, I'd get 3/4 of the way there, and I'd get this knot in my stomach. I didn't want to get on the plane. I didn't like going back there. I'd go in and vote. I'd go back and sit on, when I got there, I'd go in and vote when needed to, go sit on the speaker's lobby waiting for the next vote. I had burned a lot of bridges, we'll put it that way. I had a few friends, Steve King being one of the greatest guys I ever met, but very few others. The leadership hated me. They did everything they could to make it difficult for me because of the immigration issue, all because of immigration. And so it was not a fun place. And plus, you could just see, I saw good people, great people come in, you know, with all the right attitudes, with all the right, you know, and then kapoof, it would be this, you're going to ruin your career in this place. You know, we won't come out and do fundraisers for you anymore. You won't get money from any of the, that would be the threat. And it ruined so many people I admired and enjoyed knowing, that it became a really unpleasant place. And that was the worst time of my political
life. And that famous line that I've heard more than once, you're never going to work in this business again.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay.
Well,
I remember I was doing crime stories for old Denver Magazine, and legendary Denver police officer Dan, who was it said to? I think it might have been Danny O'Hare. And the guy said, I'll have your badge. And to which Dan said, if a guy like you can have my badge, the job's not worth having. And I always felt that way with, boycott your sponsors and, that kind of stuff. And okay, if that works, that works. But you can't.
Well, you certainly can't be in either of our businesses and have that kind of thing affect you. I mean, we'd have both been long gone if we had not grown pretty thick skins. It's just that, and it wasn't just the fact that, I didn't have that many friends in Congress anymore. It was the aura of the place. It was this I think, facade that I left the Republican Party, what, a month and a half ago? Because I'm at an event, the Republican presidential debate that was here in Colorado at the University of Colorado, whenever that was, a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And I was asked to go and respond to if there were going to be questions afterwards by students because I had been on the stage at one point in time and maybe, whatever. So I said, sure. So I'm sitting there on the stage, Ryan Call, my dear friend, of course, ex-Republican Party chair,
We want him back.
Yeah, that's it. Made a big mistake there, too.
Sure did.
He's on the stage, and this a young lady who's head of the college, young Republican, and this girl comes up, and she comes up to the microphone, and she says, I'm just wondering, she says, she looked like maybe she was 20, I'd say, student. She says, I'm wondering, I'm thinking about becoming a Republican. She said, but would you mind telling me why I should? Can you give me some reasons why I should? And I looked at her, and I again got this horrible
knot.
Yeah. And I started out with, well, there's less government and create free enterprise and things. Yeah. But I'm thinking,
you can't come up with it legit.
I can't do this legitimately, right?
Yeah.
Driving home that night, I'm thinking to myself, if I can't do that, if I can't tell somebody why they should become a Republican, what the hell am I doing here as a Republican? And so I got home the next morning, went online, and I left the party. Of course, there are a lot of things that happened leading up to that, as you know.
I've always said, I hate the Democrats, but I really hate the
Republicans. Yeah. Well, that's it. I need to feel some allegiance to organizations I join, or I call myself a part of. And there is no allegiance. What's there to align yourself with? There is no philosophy. There is no, if it is the philosophy of, and I'm sure this is not unique to the Republican Party. I'm sure it's the same for the parties have become, I think, quite irrelevant.
Well, they're money. Parties are money.
It's a way you raise money, and it's the mechanism that's set in law as to how you have to get onto the ballot, right? And they control it. Believe me, baby, these two parties control that to a great extent.
And then it blows back because they, if I pay for the band, I get to tell them what to play.
Yeah, that's
there's
right.
An old line,
right.
If I give a dance, you pay the band.
That's
and
right.
So if I'm shilling out big bucks in a super PAC, we were talking about Jeb Bush this morning spending almost $3,000 a vote. And what do those guys want if Jeb gets there?
Oh, yeah. Well, the happiest guy. Well, one last little anecdote while I'm thinking of it. I used to go in and that speak. Tom DeLay, the bad cop, the speaker was the good cop, Hastert. Nice, big guy.
Dennis. Jammed up now.
He's jammed up. He'd grab me and he'd go, Tommy.
He's a wrestler, yeah.
And he'd give me this little
nuggies.
Tommy, say, you got to join the team, buddy. You got to get on the team. Come on. And but he did it in this jovial, more sort of way, as such, because I always wanted to go, oh, gee, Mr.
Don't touch me.
At the time, who knew anything about it? He was just a really old, nice, this big teddy bear type of guy. But he put you into this, oh, God, you're so nice, Mr.
Come
Speaker.
On.
I want to I'd go. I say, Mr. Speaker, I've been looking for the team since the day I got here. I swear to you, sir, I never came into this place, and this is the honest to God's truth, I never came in thinking I was going to be a curmudgeon and just want to mix it up with him. Hmm. I wanted to be on the team. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do, I thought, well, especially when Bush won, I thought, oh my God, here we got a Republican president, a House, a Senate. We're going to do all this stuff. We're going to close those borders. We're going to actually get control over immigration. We're going to spend less money.
Not a chance.
No, man, it all just went south so quickly. And so that was really the beginning of the end for me.
But in my reading and listening to so many smart people, yourself more than at the top of the list, you start looking at the here back to money. Go Pack, National Republican Governors, National Chamber of Commerce. They're all advocates for open borders. And so they're the ones funding all of
right.
this. And so
it's
a guy like
right.
George W. Bush, who I obviously believe is the worst president, not only in my lifetime.
You do?
But possibly the worst in the history of the country.
You don't
country.
Like G.W.? Or G.H., I guess. He's yeah. George Herbert.
No, he's...
He was okay or not?
Well,
was the old man
Walker.
Okay?
Herbert Walker, he's an interesting guy. George W., who's Walker. George,
yeah, yeah. Okay.
But, you know, all
right,
those guys
right.
are real.
G.W.
He was named after a guy. It was a guy, Walker, that, you know, that was a friend of his father's. And that's how he picks up that name. But, no, I think, you know, he's absolutely has done irreparable harm to foreign policy in this country, domestic policy in this country. Having said that, but when he was doing his goodbye interviews, forget about Iraq, forget about Afghanistan, forget about all of these other things. They said, what is your biggest regret? He said, that citizenship path, I never got that done.
Yeah, that's right.
So how am I supposed to cheerlead this? I mean, I can't.
No, of course not. And but that's what I meant was, when I said to the speaker, I thought something. I thought we had an agenda. I thought we had talked about it to the people of the nation. I thought it had to do with less government, less regulate, fewer regulations. But of course, none of that has worked out. Well, he says, you know, you can't do everything.
Yeah,
no, and
never even tried.
Well, and the oh, God, Peter, one of the worst days of oh, this was the worst day of my life. Sitting through the a debate and then a vote on the Medicare prescription drug bill, Part D. That was the worst day because here we were, the Republican Party, a president, Republican president, Republican Congress, putting through the greatest increase in government since the creation of Medicare. Yeah. We were doing it, and we were all doing it because Bush wanted the electoral votes of the state of Florida.
Yeah.
And we were spending $1 trillion bill. This is $1 trillion over
is that
10 years.
For his brother, principally.
No, he was coming. It was coming up. He knew he was going to. You know, he was running again. He wanted the electoral votes.
But was that to help his brother?
It was for his the presidency.
For him to get over.
Yes, right. Absolutely. This was, and you know, there was a hanging Chad situation, right? Okay, but it was all Florida. He needed Florida. This was a very thin band of need out there. There was like that many people that actually were. Too poor for Medicare, Medicaid, too much for but the expenses were high for, so we were going to do this for them, right? All for Florida. Him pulling, we had to stay there from 12 o'clock the vote started. It's supposed to be a 15-minute vote. This is midnight, not 12 o'clock in the afternoon. We've been there since 9 debating it. They didn't have the votes. Didn't have them, man. The Democrats had promised them they were going to give him the votes to pass this thing because you never bring a bill up that you don't think you're going to pass. It's a big no-no. So the Democrats had promised him because they couldn't get Republican votes. But the Democrats took one look at that thing and thought, the counter and said, hey, I think we can embarrass them pretty well. Yeah. And all of a sudden, we didn't have the votes. So there we were at midnight. You're supposed to have a 15-minute vote, Peter. 15 minutes. Sometimes they push it to about 20, get everybody in. 6.5 hours we're still sitting there. 6:30 in the morning. People, I mean, I'm sleeping on, they're putting buddies with you. You're anybody from your delegation who was for it had to come and bug you all 6 hours. And my buddy was Bob Beaupre. And I kept telling Bob, hey, listen, buddy, go to sleep. Yeah. I'm going to go to sleep. I'm never going to vote for this. Yeah. Save your time. I never, ever. But pulling people, all you could hear was arms being twisted and broken on the floor, right? Promising things. I mean.
Give me this, I'll give you that.
Oh, yeah. You have, and it was never like, it was. We know you've got a lot of stuff in the pipeline. You got that bridge and, you know, we want to help you out.
We'll work with you.
We'll want to work with you, right? It was the most horrible thing. And I saw one of my best friends in Congress, a guy from Colorado, Joel Heffley. He was like a 98.
I thought he was a good guy.
Oh, God. Joel was the best. Really, it was like a 98%er, right? Yeah. Conservative. And we're sitting there at 6:30. Nothing. I mean, it's 217. Need 218. One more vote. Mm. And they can't get it. Here comes the speaker. Boop, 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 boop. Down. Comes, oops. Sits with next to Joel. I'm in back of him. Like, you know, because everybody is, there's a quiet, there's nobody, you know, you're all on the floor, they won't let you leave. So, but everybody can see what's happening. And then the speaker walks down and he says to Joel, he says, we came in as freshmen together 22 years ago, freshman wow. class. And Joel said, yes, sir, we did. And he said, I've always enjoyed it. You're a great guy. He said, and you know, you're the chairman of the, it was a subcommittee on, armed services.
Yeah.
And he said, because he was Colorado Springs,
sure,
you know,
of course.
And he said, and you're the head of the, it was called the NATO Parliamentary Assembly. It's kind of a hotshot thing. We got to travel all over. Yeah. He always asked us. It was great fun. Anyway, great guy. Son, he says, but I need you. He says, I've never asked you before for anything, right? Joel says, oh, no, sir. He says, well, I need you. This is it, buddy. I want it. And Joel says, I can't, Mr. Speaker. I just can't do it. And he goes, You enjoy being that chairman, right? And all that. He says, you want to be tomorrow?
Yeah.
This is his buddy. This is his pal. Yeah. Right? And he goes back and sits up. And I lean over. Did I just hear him threaten you with your chairmanship?
Yeah.
Joel just looks ahead, right? Doesn't say a word. We wait. It's quiet. There's nothing. All of a sudden, gets up.
Votes.
Walks down. Oh, my God. I literally, now I'm not kidding you, I almost threw up. I mean, we'd been there all night. It was a very emotional. There was a lot of crap going on. And now, here's my best. Oh, my God. And he walks down, and he'd have to pick up the green thing and go, and hand it to the girl. And she goes, Representative Heffley, off, no, on, I. And the hammer comes down. Boom, 218. It passed. You know, he never was the same after that. He stayed another term, but, you know, he got shingles.
No, he went through all kinds of
stuff. Oh, my God. And it's an emotional, shingles is an emotional, I think there's some component there, right? Got it up here and his throat. Oh, damn near killed him.
Yeah.
And then he quit, and it was just the most horrible. That was the worst day of my political
life. That's that advise and consent that they talk about. And there's so much at risk today, and you watch these people in action. We got a couple more minutes to do this. Last night, Iowa comes in.
Yeah.
Any shocks?
Oh, the happiest guy in Iowa last night was a guy by the name of Rubio.
Yeah. Came in. He came this close to Cruz.
Exactly. Yeah. To Trump.
I mean, to Trump, right?
Right. And within one percentage point of Trump.
Yeah.
And this puts him right now, he has got more, he probably has more Big Mo. You know, momentum.
Probably.
Than even Cruz for winning it.
Wow.
Yeah. Even though I swear I supported Cruz and my Steve King, you know, he was on the stage with him last night. I watched him. He's as happy as a little kid. But there's a long way to go for those guys. But for him, for Rubio, first of all, what this means for Rubio?
Money.
All the money starts to move away, man.
Yeah.
You know, no more Bush money. No more. It all starts to move in his direction. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
From the establishment.
Carson Fiorina.
That's right. And so when they drop out, where do those votes go? I mean, they're not going to Cruz. When Fiorina's people drop out and Christie's people drop out, those people are not going. They're not Cruz people. They will have now a viable alternative that they see, and that's Rubio. He's the guy that was. Really and truly, if anybody has a reason to be ecstatic today, it's Rubio.
How does Hillary Clinton feel?
Oh, man, she's got a... I don't know that she feels.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. She's such a strange duck in so many ways. But if she were a regular human being, she's got to say, oh, no, not again. Not again.
Yeah. It's almost, I said it on a radio show, it's almost Old Testament stuff. It's like Shakespeare's King Lear. It's like a Greek tragedy. She's standing there. He's sick. There's something wrong with Bill Clinton.
Oh, God. Yeah, I think so.
Right behind her on the other side's Chelsea, and she's angry. and she's standing there and she's trying to faint this.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, it's, I always said they were, that they were Tom and Daisy and Gatsby, where everything, everywhere they went, there was destruction or things happened in the wake of everywhere they traveled.
Yeah.
And that's Bill and Hillary Clinton. But now he's standing there, slack-jawed, and the daughter's there, and she's angry. And I'm thinking, what are we watching happen?
Yeah. I certainly, as I say, I know who the happy one should be from last night, and she's not the,
no.
not the one.
No, no.
Not by any means.
This is our first go with this. And
hey, a lot of fun.
You know what? It was like, you know, one thing, there's a part of our business that you get, you know, jockeys are only as good as their horses. And if I have a great horse, I can be a good jockey. The worst things that ever happen is when you're sitting there with somebody you're really waiting to talk to, and you ask them a question and they say yes. Or they say no. And there's no follow-up. Tommy is so good at all of this. We've been friends a long, long time, ride motorcycles together, family friends together. He's a tremendous...
But I'm not joining your gang, your motorcycle club.
That's right. The Iron Order.
Yeah. No, I don't think I'm
but, I mean, they don't come any better than this guy. So it's a first time out. And tell friends about it, because I thought that was a real look behind the curtain. Thank you to Mark Crowley. We're in the Mark Crowley Theater, just like the Ed Sullivan Theater. And everybody around there, I'll be back at 5 a.m. on a morning near you on 710 KNUS. Thanks for watching this.